Hi, this is Ernie Fazio. This is Earnestly Speaking, and I'm talking to Mark Lesko, and he's the executive director of Accelerate Long Island. And when we were phasing out the last segment, we were talking about how we have serendipity in science, where you don't really know where you're going, even after you've created something that's pretty unique. And I was doing radio back in 1988, between 1988 and 96. And during that time, I was talking to people at the national laboratories all over the country, as well as the power companies and anybody in the energy business, because that was my focus of technology. And I got somebody on the phone who was from Lawrence Livermore. And he said, you're really interested in this stuff. I said, yeah. He says, why don't you come on out and to visit the place? So we did. So I went home. I told my wife, I says, we're going to California. We'll spend a couple of days out there, and we'll have a little vacation. And we were guests over at the Lawrence Livermore. And when they took us on a tour, and they said, these are all inventions and, you know, things that were made. Some of them we don't know what they'll ever be used for. But we had a bunch of business people who were technically savvy come in here a while back, and he said, that technology I want to license. And he asked him why. He says, because I can fix the Hubble. Remember the Hubble was blind?
Oh, sure, absolutely, yeah.
Well, the technology was useful in creating the lenses that were necessary, and he was able to figure out what was necessary with that piece of equipment. So he licensed it.
Oh, he did? Oh, wow.
He licensed it, and that's why the Hubble has been producing all these wonderful pictures for all of these years. So here was this hundreds of millions of dollars floating around in space, totally useless because somebody screwed up in the original work. And here was a guy who had the savvy and to make this, to use an invention that he didn't do the research on. He just knew that it would work or sensed that it would work.
Sure. I tell you, that bringing that business expertise into the laboratory setting is critical. We actually do that on a smaller level at Accelerate, particularly with our venture partners. We'll frequently visit with what are called the tech transfer offices, and Brookhaven Lab, Cold Spring Harbor Lab, North Shore, Stony Brook. It's a regular thing, and we'll take a look at their inventions and we'll give our opinions on them. And some of them might not have commercial applications and others might. And I think invariably the professionals at the research institutions appreciate that business mindset. Yeah. When you're evaluating the technologies. I will also tell you that that our research institutions on Long Island are doing some extraordinary basic research, but they're all now talking about taking that basic research into what's called the translational phase, which means translating it into some sort of commercial application that can affect humanity.
Well, that was what they were doing at Livermore then. And, I would say that there's, you said it yourself. There's a lot of things hanging around that we don't know what they're used for yet.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's a matter of having somebody who has not only the business sekel, as they say in Yiddish, but and you didn't know that I was Jewish, but and I'm not. But I hung around with them enough that I know all the terms. But in any case, they have the business sekel, and yet they have the technical understanding of the things that they're looking at. And when you have that combination, you have a dynamite combination.
I couldn't agree more. And, a lot of it is also timing. And we have the luxury, particularly at the larger laboratories, where there's not this pressure to produce basic research on any particular timeline. They're just answering fundamental questions. And out of that could come something that has commercial application. But that's not the primary purpose. And that's kind of exciting. So you'll take for example, the light source, the new light source.
Yeah, that's going to be something else.
Who knows what is going to come out of that?
I'm willing to venture that they'll be able to create a molecular structure that's far stronger than steel.
Interesting.
Far stronger than steel and much less weight. What does that mean? Well, It means, well, you know, I've been very interested in the magnetically levitated transportation
system.
Well, the maglev.
I think you taught me everything I know about maglev, to be honest.
Maglev has tremendous lift. So what if you can make the car half its weight and be stronger, you can now your payload is increased immensely.
That's incredible.
And that's where that's the kind of efficiencies you're going to see out of the light source. And I believe that's going to happen.
You know, a lot of the discussions we have, particularly at Brookhaven Lab and at Stony Brook University, are around advanced materials, nanomaterials, nanostructures. You know, this kind of whole area of business that has multiple applications, whether it be in transportation, in building new buildings, that type of thing, all the way down to, you know, in the nanomaterial realm, you know, applications you wouldn't even think about. Coatings on glass, for instance, and making the glass more water repellent or less reflective. I mean, these inventions
less beating of water and things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. It's mind-boggling stuff. And you know, the key really is taking these really cool inventions and figuring out a specific application where there's a market. That's really what you have to do. You have to match a market with the technology, and
you got to do it cheap.
You got to be able to pay for it. I mean,
well,
exactly.
I was listening to a show that John Gomez was doing. The guy was talking about flat screens costing $6,000, and now they cost $500, you know, for the same size, you know. That's okay, because you have the first, the people who want to have the first kid on the block to have it, you know, and that's how we get that and things done that way. But to be mass marketed, you have to be cheap. You have to be very inexpensive. I don't mean cheap in quality. I mean inexpensive to produce and to sell and to be universal. And I think that's where the big challenge is, always.
And I agree. And you know, when you actually reduce dramatically the costs associated with innovation, you see explosion of innovation. And look at software. Software with cloud computing removed the need for all these companies to buy the infrastructure, buy the servers and so forth, which was incredibly costly. So now you have all this innovation. You've got college kids, you know, writing app programs as we speak. That is what's leading to the Airbnbs of the world. And that's happening in other industries as well. You're right. Solar the cost of solar has dramatically reduced, so that there's a bunch of different options around solar.
Solar was around $30 a watt 40 years ago. And then it got to be $20 a year. And then 8 years ago, it was maybe $4 a watt. And today it's like 60 cents.
Well, and also, Ernie, I mean, you know this sector very well. Companies figured out the finance model. So it used to be government had to subsidize the installation of solar. We did that at the town of Brookhaven. We had a program called Go Solar, and we would provide subsidies. But now companies can provide full financing for this type of thing, and it's disruptive.
So the mentality is, I waited too long, I could have got the subsidies. But with the subsidies, I would have paid more than if I buy it outright now.
I think that's right, from what I understand. I mean, I know, I'll give you an anecdote. In my neighborhood, tons of houses are installing solar panels on the roofs, and my neighbors are telling me that this is fully financed, so companies are approaching them. They lease the solar panels on the
roof.
Yeah,
I'm not crazy about that program.
I'm an old
Italian who likes to buy stuff.
You like to buy stuff? So you buy your cars, I guess.
I buy my cars.
You buy your cars.
I don't lease my cars. That's true. I bought two cars in the last 2 years, and one for my wife, one for me. We both bought them outright, you know, because
I have this fight with my wife all the time, and I'm a buyer and she's a leaser, and we compromise. We have one and one. But
she leases hers, I buy mine.
Is that right? Well, there you go.
No, I'm talking about you.
Oh, that's the let's go discussion. Exactly.
But you know, I've always been the optimist. You know, I don't know how well you know me or how what opinions have you formed over me over the years, but I'm always optimistic, unrelenting, and not too bright. But
should go into politics then.
I have a funny story about that too. But years ago, Frank, what was his name? He was the supervisor here.
In Islip Town?
Yeah.
It would have been like Pete McGowan, maybe? Or
no, Frank
then?
Something his name was. Okay. Anyways, when they closed Pilgrim State, half the people went out on the streets of Babylon. And I said, yeah, and this is at a Limba meeting. I said, yeah, and the other half went into politics.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
So anyway, this is Ernie Fazio. I've been talking to Mark Lesko. He's the executive director of Accelerate Long Island. And we have one more segment, so stay tuned.